Welcome to the University of the Free State Career Services podcast, where we talk to experts about the ins and outs of jobs and share tips that will give you a grip on your future career.
Hi, everybody. It's Matt Cronier for the UFS Career Services podcast. And today I'm very excited to be speaking to Professor Katinka de Wet. Prof. Katinka de Wet is currently an associate professor at the Department of Sociology, where she lectures third year and honors students social theory modules. She completed her postgraduate studies in France, obtaining her PhD in 2007 at the School for Advanced Studies in the Social Sciences in Paris. Since 2021, she has been the co-director of the Interdisciplinary Center for Digital Futures at the University of the Free State. Prof. de Wet is passionate about student success, development, and career readiness, and strives to strengthen her teaching with her various research efforts. Her particular areas of research interest include medical sociology, digital sociology, and research ethics. Prof. de Wet, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Matt.
Awesome. It's great to have you here. And that's, I as I mentioned to you previously, I purposefully needed to change the name there of the institution that you studied your PhD, because I was not going to attempt to pronounce that that French. But I think let's maybe start there. What? How did you end up there for your PhD? What was your route?
Yes, it's quite a long story. So I did French at school,
okay,
and I was very, very interested in pursuing French. I wanted to become a diplomat, actually,
okay,
when I was younger. And one thing led to the next. So I did French at school, went to be an au pair in Belgium, and then I came back to the University of the Free State, where I studied French and political science.
Okay.
And then I got a bursary to go study in Bordeaux just mm-hmm. for a year. But then the year turned to 2 years. And then after the 2 years, I spoke to someone who said, why don't you pursue a PhD? And I ended up doing a PhD at this École des Hautes Études en Sciences Sociales in, mm-hmm. in Paris, France.
Nice.
And that's how it happened.
Oh, wow. Okay. So where does... So where did sociology fit in to the to the bigger picture for
That's
you?
That's a very good question. Yeah, so I said I studied French and political science.
Yes.
So that's actually what I pursued in France. I went to France and I studied okay. political science.
Yeah.
But political science in France is a much wider kind okay. of like domain mm. compared to the political science I did here in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, we were exposed to courses in history, philosophy, anthropology, sociology, okay. A lot of things. It's more social sciences as mm-hmm. an overarching discipline. And then when I started speaking to the person who would eventually become my PhD supervisor, he suggested I enroll in sociology for my PhD because he was actually a medical anthropologist. I was more into political science, and sociology was almost like the like midway between the two.
Place.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, that's really interesting. Okay. And as a student, how did you sort of experience the differences between university life there and university life here?
I think students struggle with the same issues mm. in South Africa, in France. The structure there was very different.
Okay.
Going to a class there in France, you had to take down notes as mm. your lecturer spoke. There was nothing like a study guide or mm. learning outcomes or, you know, like these kind of like PowerPoint presentations that
yeah.
could guide you. You absolutely had to go to class, mm. take down notes and study your notes.
Mm.
So that was quite different from yes. what we were used to here in
okay.
the South African context.
Mm.
But other than that, like I said, students sit with the same issues everywhere.
Mm.
You know, some students don't work hard enough. They don't prioritize. We all, you know, procrastinate, mm-hmm. etc. So the context was a bit different.
I think thinking back to in high school, so that's also a big thing that a lot of people who listen are also sort of still trying to make their decisions about where to go, what to do, how to make these choices. Was the political science route always the one for you? I think you mentioned you wanted to be a diplomat. Was that sort of always the plan in high school, or was there something else as well?
I really don't think we know what we want to become
okay.
or even study when we're in high school.
Fair.
But there might be some students who know, or learners who know what they want to do, but I was definitely not sure.
Mm.
So I came to university and it was kind of like speaking to this person and that person, and yeah, like the diplomat route was kind of something that I had in mind, but I actually had very little information about what I could really do. So that kind of like guidance, I think, was really lacking when I was in high school. Okay. And I was very confused, but I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it's also sometimes good to be confused and to try things and to see where it goes. I don't think we need to have this very well-defined plan from the get-go.
Yeah.
We can also grow as people.
Mm. Okay. So what sort of advice would you give young people, either first years? Because, I mean, we see this a lot in the social sciences students coming in, and they're just like, well, this not entirely sure where I want to go, but I think, you know, this is the course I can get into, and this is the general direction I'm going to follow. What advice would you give young people who are in the process of figuring out where what to do with their careers one day?
I think if there's one good piece of advice that I can give in retrospect is when you are confused about what you want to become, it doesn't mean you have to waste your time. So if you are doing something and you don't really know where it's going to take you, make the most of it. Yeah. Learn from it. Really make the what you are studying your own, because that is how doors start opening and how pennies start dropping.
Yeah.
Because if you say, oh, you know what? I don't really know what I want to do, but I'm not really interested in what I'm doing. I'm just doing it because I want to be here. And, okay, I am at the university now. I think that's really you wasting your time.
Yeah.
You wait, not only your own time, you're wasting precious resources. You are wasting your lecturer's time. You're wasting your own time. You're wasting your parents' time, whoever's paying for you. So make the most of what you are doing, even if you don't know what you're going to do with it.
Yeah.
Because if you don't immerse yourself in what you're doing, how are you ever going to find out what you like and dislike?
Yes.
So I think that's probably the most valuable piece of advice. You don't have to know where things are going to end up, but don't waste your time.
Yeah. For you personally, if you weren't doing this and you didn't follow this whole career path, what else would you like to have been doing?
I think I would have really liked being an artist, but I'm not artistic at all.
Okay.
But I wish I could just draw or sing or dance or play a musical instrument or being like just being really creative.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's something I feel that is lacking in my life.
Mm.
Although, you know, one can be creative in different ways. But yeah, just being an artist and being so free and express yourself like that.
Do you feel that sort of that part of you gets any expression in the academic world? I think people often have this idea that the academic world is very rigid and strict and things like that. But every now and then you do see people who can infuse a little bit of creativity, maybe in the way that they look at something a bit differently or whatever the case may be. Do you find that that interest or that part of your character can sometimes come through in your academic work as well?
Well, I hope so.
Yeah.
I think one transforms and one adapts the whole time. I don't think you ever reach a point where you can say, I am an accomplished lecturer or I am an accomplished sociologist or whatever. So I think that kind of like I'm prepared to learn for the rest of my life. I'm prepared to change my approach for the rest of my life, or hopefully. And I think that flexibility is probably the way I express my creativity in inverted commas.
So
I think it's that flexibility maybe that I can say is the closest link to this artistic expression. I don't like rigid, set in stone kind of like ways of being and doing.
Yeah.
I wish students had more confidence at the beginning of a semester to say, why can't we try this?
Yes.
Or can we do this? Or challenge me. But almost like coming up with suggestions.
Yeah.
Can we try this? It would be wonderful if students can also have more of a voice in a lecture or in a module.
Yeah. Obviously, no job's perfect. You know, it's not always, waking up to, you know, birds chirping and sun shining and everything's beautiful. What are some of the challenges that you faced in your career so far?
I think an academic career can be really tough because you often have to live with challenges such as rejection. If you submit an article and a journal comes back and kind of pulls it apart or, says this is not good and the way you've written it is not good enough.
Yes.
And also just when you also deal with students as a lecturer, you don't necessarily always get the results that you think that you are going to get. Yes. You think that you put in a lot of effort, but you don't get a, you know, like it's not reflected in the results. So, yeah, you can often become a bit discouraged by these things. But I think you've got to have quite a thick skin if you're an academic and as well as a lecturer. You've got to realize that it's work in progress, that, you know, things will eventually get better or there will be better days and worse days. And another thing I think that's really a challenge in academic life is just the bureaucratization of everything that we do. All the, you know, like the admin, all the online documentation and the systems and everything you do is something online and then the system doesn't work. It's very frustrating. It's just we're so over bureaucratized. So sometimes it takes away all the joy because you feel you just have to fill in forms or write reports or, which obviously are important aspects of the job we are doing. But you sometimes just feel like a pain pusher.
Yeah, I just want to teach. I just want to teach. I want to share knowledge. I want to generate knowledge.
Yeah, or just write.
That. Yeah, yes. Yeah. Awesome. And so on that, you sort of mentioned joy. What does bring you joy in your job, in your life? What motivates you? What brings you joy in this context?
I think being an academic is an extremely privileged position to have. We are basically free to pursue any research that we are interested in. It's wonderful that we've got this wide scope, this latitude of opportunity that we can grab or not. So I really think it's a privileged space in which to work. It's sometimes, you know, we've got challenges, the ones I've mentioned, but it brings me joy to be able to read new things. That's part of my job.
Yeah.
I can read an article about the complexities around artificial intelligence and how it influences society today because it's something I'm really interested in and it's part of my job. And also just to be able to work with students and sometimes see, you know, that penny has dropped with that student or you did, that student surprises you. You know, you didn't expect this. And then a student, you know, just comes and completely surpasses all expectations.
Yes.
So those are the things that bring me joy, but also the fact that I think I've got a balanced life.
Okay.
My job is very important. I'm really passionate about my profession and, you know, doing it, my job well. But I'm also very mindful of having a balanced life. So my family also brings me a lot of joy.
Okay.
My family, my friends, the things I do that's not work related. But as a sociologist, everything is intertwined.
Yes.
So in a way, having children, being a partner, being a mother at a school, all of those things, you know, it's all sociological.
Yeah.
So you can actually bring sociology into everything you do. And that is, I think that is really a privilege, like I said, to be an academic.
Yeah. And is that something, because I mean, time management and being able to separate these kinds of things sometimes is something that, I mean, we see a lot of students struggling with. Have you always been good at that in terms of, you know, balancing these things? Or is that something that you've had to learn and, you know, make some mistakes along the way?
No, I still make mistakes.
those 2 o'clock in the morning sessions trying to get deadlines done.
Exactly. No, I still make mistakes. I think it's work in progress.
Yeah.
I think we've got to realize we've got 24 hours in a day.
Yeah.
8 hours we have to sleep. You know, I feel very strongly about the fact that we've got to look after our mental health, our overall well-being, and that's very important.
Yeah.
8 hours we've got to work and then 8 hours to do other things.
Yeah.
So that's, but sometimes those 8 hours to do other things work spills into that, you know.
Yeah.
But I feel very strongly about sleeping properly, doing exercises, eating well, hanging out with people that you care for.
Yeah.
Those are the things that are really important. Like I say, sometimes you don't make a deadline. Sometimes you do forget about things. Sometimes you don't quite do something the way you wanted to do it, you know, but the deadline is now around the corner.
Yeah.
Also, we should be careful not to push ourselves too much. Sometimes, you know, to always pursue perfection is not feasible.
Yeah.
So sometimes you do your best under the circumstances and that is it.
Yeah. I think that's so good. I think also just to, like, so many students also are not, they push themselves too hard. They push themselves beyond and there is that point where like you said, you know, you have to draw that line in order to be healthy and to stay healthy. Because, I mean, this body, this mind is the only one you have to, to sort of navigate yourself through this world. And if you don't do that, then, you know, everything else becomes really, really difficult. So that sort of balance and, I guess, prioritizing the correct things at the correct time is always an important thing as well.
Absolutely.
Then I just had one question about sort of your areas of interest. So specifically around the medical and the digital sociology, could you unpack those for us a little bit? What is medical sociology? What is digital sociology? What are these things?
Okay, so digital sociology is now a more recent interest of mine, especially since I became involved in the Interdisciplinary Center for Digital Futures.
Yes.
Remember, sociology is all about rapid transformations within societies. And nothing is more rapid than the technological developments that we are witnessing currently. So that is, I mean, it's so ubiquitous in our lives, technological developments, that we can't really think sociologically and not think about those things. So it is, again, something that it pervades everything we do today because of the devices and the connected world we are inhabiting. So that is something that I've become interested in recently. So that is just looking at technological developments from a sociological perspective.
Okay.
How does it influence our relationships, you know, among people?
Yeah.
How does it redefine the world of work? How does it redefine education? I mean, that's a big question.
Sure.
How does it, you know, it kind of like it shakes the core of many of our normative ways of being and ways of doing, because of the rapidity, it happens at such a rapid pace that we have to kind of like think of these things and question these things and critically reflect on it, because we can be very technologically deterministic about things, thinking that, oh, AI is going to solve all our problems, you know, health related problems, agriculture, etc. We talk about precision agriculture, precision health, et cetera, et cetera. But there are still many caveats. There are still many challenges. Everything's, there's not, technology is not a panacea.
Sure.
You know, and we've seen it over the course of history. It's not something that you can just, it's there and we use it and then it solves all our problems.
Yes.
So I love the kind of like golden thread throughout history of technological developments, how people have reacted to it, often in a very, it's good or it's evil way.
Yes.
That's not a very, helpful manner to look at it.
Yeah.
As sociologists, we hope to bring a more nuanced view as to technological development. So that's what I'm really interested in. And obviously, medical sociology, which is actually my first form of specialization, that is just to look at the medical world also from a social perspective.
Yeah.
I mean, when we fall ill, often, yes, there's something wrong with your body, but sometimes there's not something wrong with your body. There's something wrong with the context in which you find yourself.
Okay.
Or if there's something wrong with your body, you still have to go into an institution where people treat you, but they can treat you in a specific way, and they can make you feel like you are a person. They can make you feel that they care or not. So there are so many social aspects of the medical field and health and illness, or well-being. I mentioned well-being earlier. That is, it's, so it's a very wide field. Medical sociology is an extremely wide field. And so at first I was very interested in, I mean, because in South Africa, HIV/AIDS was a massive thing. So that's how I actually got into the medical sociology field, to look at the very complex issues around HIV and AIDS, the social complexities of HIV and AIDS back in the early 2000s.
Yeah. Okay, that's awesome. And I would imagine even there is that overlap between medical and digital sociology as well. Obviously, with the digital or sort of technological advances in the medical field, you have that interplay as well, as you mentioned, AI.
Absolutely, yeah, the two overlap completely.
Amazing. Then I also just want to ask you, sorry, about the Interdisciplinary Center for Digital Futures. What is that? What do you guys do there? What and how does that benefit students?
Yes, so it started off in 2002. Well, we started speaking in 2020, and then obviously it's not, if you want to create something new, a new entity at the university, you have to go through a whole lot of processes. So 2021, we were actually, myself and Dr. Herkules Kombrink, we were appointed as the interim co-directors of the Interdisciplinary Center for Digital Futures to create the center. So that 2021 we used to create the center. So it's all about research that focuses on our digitally infused realities that we face now. Mm. So the fact that there are two directors is because there's got to be this balanced view. Mm. So I'm the social scientist, and the other director is more a data scientist.
Okay.
So it's someone more from natural sciences and someone from social sciences to kind of like bring the balance into all our projects.
Oh, nice.
Yes. So the projects that we are currently focused on where students are involved, and I mean, we always invite more students if they are interested. I'm specifically involved in a digital heritage project that kind of like falls under the auspices of digital humanities.
Okay.
And we're also involved in projects. There's a research fund that was obtained with the Department of Deaf Studies and Sign Language to develop human language technology around sign language and the digitization thereof. Like I said, we work in collaboration with the department here on campus. And there's also a project on social listening to kind of like scrape data that's on like online media or online platforms to see what people's perspectives are. Mm. One of our students just now finished her master's. She got a distinction on social listening. It was around vaccine hesitancy during COVID-19 and what people said about it on Twitter. Mm. So she actually analyzed these entries that, you know, we all know of all the weird things that people said about the vaccines.
Yeah.
We've got another project that is called AI for Ed.
Mm-hmm.
So that is just to kind of like enhance the uptake and the responsible use of artificial intelligence in higher institution settings.
Okay. Oh, nice.
Yes. So we've been running sandbox experiments with people with limited experience thereof can actually come and learn more about how AI works. Because, I mean, it's something that kind of like just, you know, all of a sudden we just all arrived. Had to deal with it. Yes.
When we finish up, I usually have a couple of just quick fire questions for you. Well, not really questions, some statements, and then it's either choices or completing sentences. So don't worry, it's nothing too hectic. But so if I just say to you, coffee or tea?
Coffee.
Sweet or salty?
Sweet.
Remote or on-site?
On-site.
And then to complete the sentence, every morning I?
Get up and have coffee.
Nice. And my favorite word is?
Complexity.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you very much. Well, that's all I've got for today. So thank you so much for your time. It's been really, really nice chatting. And all the best with all the projects going forward.
Thanks a lot, Matt. It was very nice talking to you.
Super.
That's it for now. Listen to all our episodes to make sure that you get into the fast lane of career success.